Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting episode on Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, the radio chick, Ann Ubelis, and we have with us our co-host, Cool Mike. And before we get to our guest that is holding on the line, I want to get around to one reminder announcement that this is for tomorrow. It is the islandcharities.com. They're going to have their annual walk run, and this will start tomorrow at 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. People are going to meet at Rapid Refill, which is located at 612 Robert Smalls Parkway here in Beaufort, and this will benefit little Morgan Porter. She's a three-year-old that is up at the University of South Carolina in Charleston awaiting a heart transplant. So if you cannot attend the walk run, please go to the islandcharities.com, and you can make a donation to help this adorable little three-year-old girl who is courageously awaiting a heart transplant. And I will put that charity site location up in the chat room if anyone is interested in going and taking a little donation over there to little Megan Porter. Now, this is an exciting day. We've got our guest, Frank Aquila. He wrote the book Sarah Palin Out of Nowhere. Good afternoon, Frank, and good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Hi, Sarah. Ann, how you doing, Ann? And Mike, how are you?
Mike. Doing good. Yeah, I'm right here. I expected a little bigger intro, but anyway, doing great. Great to have you here. I'm loaded with questions, actually, so why don't we let our guest kind of introduce himself and tell a little bit about himself, and then we can start with the questions.
That sounds like a fantastic idea. Frank, can you introduce yourself, how you got involved with Sarah Palin and ended up writing this book?
Well, actually, in 2008, the Senator John McCain's campaign actually called me up, and they stated I was recommended as one of the leaders out here in California, and they wanted me to be on their team for Senator McCain. And so I became a chairman for Senator John McCain out here in northern central California.
All right, and you also had a little bit of a tussle, though, with the Republican Party, where you ended up founding the Republican Party in San Joaquin.
Yes, yes. Well, how that happened is, you know, I actually ended up moving out to the northern central California, out of the Bay Area. And I decided at that time I wanted to get involved in politics. I really wasn't liking the direction of our country was going. It kind of really fell right after the Bush-Gore election. And I really felt like that we needed to kind of reach out to voters in a different way. So I actually went to the Republican Party in San Joaquin County and tried to come up with some ideas. To really make the Republican Party more personable, to get people feel like they have a better avenue to get involved. And really, they just kind of told me to take a hike. The chairman actually even told me that he can't even believe he wasted an hour talking to me. And so from there, I actually went ahead and decided I was going to start my own political organization. I think they thought I was going to fail. And I just took upon the ideas that I thought was going to be successful in building up the Republican Party and just basically did it in the smaller cities that surrounded my city. And my political organization took off. And the way I designed it, I'm a peace officer out here in California, so I didn't have a whole lot of time. Also, I coach baseball. I'm a single parent. I have two little boys. They're 7 and 9 years old. And so I didn't have a lot of time to be doing a lot of meetings, but when I set that those meetings up, those meetings only meet 3 times a year, and now I get anybody that's running for any type of political office at all is basically banging at my door saying, "Hey, I'd like to have some time to speak in front of your group because my political organization had gone from zero to basically a membership now of about 2,000." So when I became very successful as a congressman in this area, really saw that what I was doing was better than what the Central Committee was doing, and I was doing it basically kind of just with no money at all. I became very successful in my own political right, and he actually set me up to meet with President Bush. I became a delegate for the California State Republican Party, went down there, met some people, and then after that, put it like this, the Central Committee is now kind of terrified of my organization because how successful it has become and doing the things that they should have been doing all along. So it's really resonated with some people that have had those problems and realizing that the Central Committee's a lot of times there are people on there that are just about themselves instead of about what is needed in the party. And from that, there was a lady down in Southern California area that she met me at the California Republican Convention, recommended me to the John McCain campaign, whom I didn't even vote for John McCain in the primary, which is kind of ironic, and I could tell you about that later. But from there, I was able to be asked to be a chairman for Senator McCain, and from that position, I actually ended up lobbying for Governor Palin, which I could tell you about as well.
All right. Well, believe it or not, we actually have a caller coming in this early in the show. Area code 748, you are live on the air with our guest Frank Aquila and my co-host Cool Mike. Who am I speaking to?
Yeah, that's Ron.
Yeah, hi, Ron.
Hi. Ron Schwartz, Dublin, Georgia.
Yep. Matter of fact, Ron is in charge of the Dublin, Georgia Tea Party, and he and I always exchange Tea Party information because, as you know, Frank, I'm the founder and webmaster for the Buford Tea Party here in South Carolina.
Well, you know, it's a pleasure hearing Ron's voice because I know Ron had been in contact with me. He was one of the very first people to actually buy my book and read it and really try to promote my book out there to other people as well. And if my name had been John McGinnis out there writing a trashy book about Governor Palin, I'm sure I would have got a lot more media attention. But I'll tell you what, I wrote a very positive book about Governor Palin, and Ron's been out there letting people know that this book is a very powerful book. So thanks, Ron, and I appreciate hearing your voice now.
Hey, you don't know. I was waiting for you to come on. I told you one of these days we'd get to talk. I'm sorry, Ann, but him and I were talking back when he was talking about writing the book, and I've followed him ever since. And I can tell you one thing. the book, even though Sarah is not running, this book is not outdated by the least bit, because it is a really factual book. So,
well, it's great. You know, I'm surrounded by great company. I have Annie, I have Ron, and I have Frank. Frank, let me interpret something. As you were doing your intro, you had mentioned that you sat down and talked to the chairman of the Republican Party. In other words, you were under the impression, like most of America, that the Republican Party basically started catering to the fat cats of the country club and ignoring the little peons like Ron and myself and Annie and you.
Absolutely. I've talked to a lot of Tea Party organizations. Even though my organization is called the South San Joaquin Republicans, I always tell people that what's happening with the Republican Party is they're chasing after the Democrat Party instead of just standing on principles. And, you know, I'm a person, I believe, you know what, you stand on principles and you stand for what you believe in. And, you know, I state like this, the Republican Party, well, I'll just say, let me put it in a different way. The Democrat Party is leading this nation to a quick death. The Republican Party is leading this nation to a slow death. And the Tea Party is actually trying to keep this nation alive. You know, so that's my view. We need to get the Republican Party to come back to their conservative principles and be a staunch difference to the Occupy Wall Street Democrat Party that's led by the communists, and really tell people what the Democrat Party is, who they've been hijacked by, and what they stand for. We can't become a mini socialist party and say, well, we got to go ahead and try to capture the middle. We got to basically inform people of what capitalism is and what communism is and what the differences are between the two.
That's true. That's something that we've been battling with all Republican parties, especially here in South Carolina. You've got a lot of people that were originally Democrats, but simply to get elected, switched over into the Republican Party. They're still Democrats. They're just Republican in name only, the true rhinos. And we're battling that here in South Carolina. But we have a core group, the Tea Party is here now, and others that are trying to get them out, especially with a good, solid Republican chairman in the chair now. Are you finding the same thing there with you?
Here in California?
Yeah.
I was at a Tea Party group last night. I think basically what the problem is across the nation, you have too many uninformed people. And I think, you know, when you come into the more conservative states, those are people that are more informed. Those are people that that love God. They love their country. They love what the Constitution stands for, and they want to go ahead and keep those principles alive. Some of these other people that are, like I said, that are led to believe that we need equality across the board of communism, which is a commune, and in allowing the government to gain more control and remove business, remove capitalism. And it's kind of like what Thomas Jefferson stated, a government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have. And so people have to be really concerned about giving your government too much power, which basically is the principles of the Constitution, is limited government to keep the government from getting all this power. So that's what I'm trying to do, is inform more and more voters out there, especially through this book, which, you know, that's the reason I wrote this book, is to allow people to understand what we're up against. In the fight, you know, not only with our government, but with our media, you know, which is basically kind of an oxymoron, because the media is given the power to this government, and the first thing the government's going to do is take the power away from the media, and which basically the media's, that's where they're going already, is they have become a media for the government, you know, a media for Barack Obama. And I talk about that in my book, chapter 4, called Lamestream Media Mafia.
Yeah, I want to go back a little bit, because I'm looking at some of the people that McCain actually had contemplated for a vice president running mate, and some of the names, you know, I looked at them going, exactly what you said, they're going for the Democratic vote and not the Republican vote. One of them you mentioned was Joe Lieberman, and you said there was 24 of them they were considering, Mitt Romney, Lieberman, Chris Christie. You got Michael Bloomberg.
Well, Well, what there was is there was actually a list that was, when I first started, when it became a McCain chairman, there was a list of 24 that was actually posted on Newsmax. And I remember going to Newsmax, and it says, choose the candidate that you would like. You've seen those polls when you go online. And when I was online, I was looking at this list, and Sarah Palin's name was not on that list. And I didn't even really know about Sarah Palin at the time. This is going back March 2008. And I was looking at that list, and there was nobody in that list that I felt that was going to excite the conservative base. And let me back up for a second, because let me make sure people understand. I did not vote for John McCain in the primary when it hit California. What happened was I was originally behind Duncan Hunter, who was a congressman from California that was running for president. Then he dropped out because he didn't have any money. Then Fred Thompson from Tennessee, I really liked him. He dropped out. At that point, I liked Rudy Giuliani. He dropped out. And so by the time I got to California, I had my choice. I believe it was between Huckabee, Romney, Ron Paul, and McCain. And, you know, honestly, I did not like McCain. I was upset with McCain. I was upset with him about the Gang of 14 that he had when he blocked a lot of him and the Democrats had this gang where basically there was a threat of a filibuster against judicial nominees. And so I kind of chose that. I ended up choosing Romney at the time. And, you know, I just really wasn't happy with the choices I had out here. And anyways, McCain won. And when the McCain campaign actually called me, people were shocked I became a McCain chairman. They're like, wait a minute, you didn't even like John McCain. How'd you end up becoming a McCain chairman? And I said, well, they asked me, and I said, you know what? I said, anybody would be better than Barack Obama. And I'll say this about John McCain. Even though he doesn't stand on principles, he's gone waffled back and forth. The fault of Senator McCain is he likes to be liked by both sides of the aisle. He likes to be this guy that walks in the middle and wants to be loved by America. And there's nothing wrong with that in the sense that, you know, that's how people want to be liked. But you know what? You have to be a person that stands on principles of what you believe in. You can't waffle in the middle. And so Senator McCain believed if you kind of were a person in the middle, the right was going to vote for you, the people in the middle are going to vote for you, and he would win. And that wasn't the case. The media turned on him because they're a leftist organization in their own right. And so I saw that there was going to be a problem. The people that are on the right, how are they going to go ahead and vote for Senator McCain? And I had to find somebody, in my opinion, that was going to excite that political base. And what happened is I heard Governor Palin's name on a radio station, believe it or not, out of San Francisco, as I was going to work one morning. And I went home, researched her, and I said, this is the one. She is it. She's the one. And there was one thing holding me back, though, is the fact that she was pregnant with Trigg. So I kept going back and forth, looking at other choices. And I just didn't see anybody else that was going to excite that ticket, the conservative base. And when Trigg was born on April 18th, I just kept thinking about it. And on April 20th at 7:33 in the morning Pacific time, I sent my first email off to the McCain campaign saying that they need to pick Governor Palin to be on that ticket.
Now, that's very, very interesting. I'm going to ask you another question about that, but let me bring this caller in on the line. Area code 816, you are live on the air with our guest Frank Aquila and my co-host Cool Mike. Who am I speaking to?
Annie, you have not figured my number out by now.
Well, you know,
it's
I'm
Thomas.
Looking at five different things, Thomas. How are you doing?
I'm teasing you.
Okay.
No.
You have a question for Mr. Aquila.
No, not at the moment. I just wanted to listen in live. I like what he has to say so far. So, you know, I'm just listening.
Okay. Now, Frank, one of the big criticisms Sarah Palin has been getting is that she had left the governorship before she completed her full term. Now, how do you, when you say you want someone that stands by on their principles and so forth, but you have to then balance that out with her leaving the governorship early?
Yes. Yes, and you know what, I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know what, that's one of the things that people don't understand, not only what they're doing with Governor Palin, but what they're doing also with, and they're going to be doing with the other Republican candidates. Understand this, if any of your listeners out there, they probably have may have heard the term Saul Alinsky, and I'd like to go ahead and get a little bit more into in depth on Saul Alinsky. The tactics that used by Saul Alinsky, that he wrote a book called Rules for Radicals, was basically tactics were to destroy your political opponent. And you destroy them through lies, deception, manipulation, destroy their character. Do whatever you can to take that person out. So up there in Alaska, which is different than many of the other states, they could go ahead and file ethic complaints against the governor up there. And the cost, actually, a lot of that cost comes out of pocket for the person that's in that governor position. There were, from my understanding now, there were several hundred ethical complaints that were filed against Governor Palin, and they were frivolous. There was no substance to it. As a matter of fact, one of the persons that filed it was even admitted they didn't care there was nothing to it. They just wanted to go ahead and bog her down with legal fees, and the whole aspect of what they wanted to do with her was to not only destroy her politically, but also destroy her personally in her finances, because she was going to have to come out with out-of-pocket expenses for her own attorneys to fight all these charges that were brought against her. So she's sitting up there in Alaska, and in literally hundreds of ethical violations were filed against her with no basis. And the cost was going to be enormous. And so she's looking at it that she can't, she puts God and her family before anything. And she's looking at it, and she's like, first off, how is this going to affect the state of Alaska with all these charges? Because Alaska's having to pay these costs. Also, her family would have to pay these costs. And so the best thing she realized that she wasn't going to be able to do is sit there in Alaska and do the business of Alaska. She was going to be spending all her time fighting these charges and personally infecting her. So she took it at a position she would beat them at their own game. She would go ahead and resign, get down in the lower 48 where she could actually go out and meet the people, talk to the people, and help good conservative candidates run for office. And that's where she felt like, you know what, if I sit up here and get bogged down and get bankrupt over this whole thing, how is that going to help my family and how is that going to help my country? So she did the next best thing and got out there, and she helped that 2010 midterm election where the Republican Party gained a strong majority back in the House and made huge differences in even a lot of state offices.
That I'm going to ask you one thing, because you were talking about her background and so forth, but you also in the book say that she's the Democrats' worst nightmare. How would you explain that statement?
Yeah, actually, that was a letter that I actually sent to the McCain campaign. Because at the time when I wrote that, the Democrat Party would love to go ahead and mantle a woman to be the first president. And I felt like, you know what? What Governor Palin was going to be able to do is she was going to attract many women to come and vote in the Republican ticket. That's where I felt like that's where, when I was looking at a poll, for example, there was a poll where Senator McCain was really low amongst women. And that's where I felt like here you have this woman that has strong conservative values. She's not only going to excite that base, but she's also going to excite women. Much less in the same sense of I would say of Herman Cain, for example. Herman Cain's a guy that's running for president right now. I think he scares the living tar out of the Democrat Party, because Herman Cain talks about leaving the Democrat plantation. He's a guy that will open eyes to people that are African Americans out there and saying, hey, you know what, you don't have to be part of the Democrat plantation. And I think there's certain Democrat strongholds that are out there that that the Republican Party can actually break those people to come and see the Republican Party, for example, and actually make more strides to gain more people to look at capitalism and look at our Constitution and individual freedom.
I'm trying to bring Thomas back in. Thomas, you have a question? Thomas? I lost Thomas. Okay. He did say, he just sent me a message saying he had a question for you, but I guess dropped on his call. He's having a problem with Skype. Thomas has his own show called The Invisible Conservative, and he's one of the black conservatives that you are trying to reach out to, which is why I wanted to bring his question in there. In the book, you also have backgrounds on President Obama, and you question who he is, tying him in with Hamas and so forth. Now, you had some pretty powerful information in there I found very fascinating.
Okay. Was there any particular one that you want to actually talk about as far as Barack Obama?
Well, let's see. Here you made a statement in the first paragraph on page 14. It said, should the President of the United States have a friendly relationship with terrorists who bombed the U.S. Capitol, the Pentagon, and San Francisco police headquarters? Assuming at that point you're talking about, exactly, our friend William Ayers.
Yeah, right. See, you know this goes again to who is Barack Obama and what is his background. Now, the media went out dumpster diving, literally dumpster diving. They actually saw them going into trash cans and everything like that, actually trying to find information on Governor Palin. They will go to the extent of anything they can about any Republican nominee. And I always tell people, you watch out, this next election is not going to be about hope and change. It's going to be about seek and destroy, because they can't promote Barack Obama's record. So what they're going to try to do is deceivingly try to state how the other person is going to destroy the country worse, and how and it's going to be a character assassination. So, but when you look at Barack Obama, they don't tell you about Barack Obama. We have no information about Barack Obama's past. His past is completely sealed. Everything. There's been questions about his birth certificate, which basically, I could get into, but there's things about there in his birth certificate that's why it takes so long for that birth certificate to be released. And is that birth certificate even valid? And what's the real story about it? And how come the governor of Hawaii stated he couldn't find the birth certificate, and then all of a sudden it showed up when Donald Trump started talking about it? But, you know, going beyond that, here you have William Ayers. William Ayers is a terrorist. He is a domestic terrorist. He has bombed the U.S. Capitol, bombed the U.S. Pentagon, and bombed a San Francisco police headquarters, killing Officer Sergeant Brian McDonnell, and eight other officers were injured. And this is a guy that believes in coordinating terrorist activities. This is an actual quote from his organization, the Weather Underground, which basically the ideology of the Weather Underground was this, quote unquote, kill all the rich people, break up their cars and apartments, bring the revolution home, kill your parents. This is a guy that Barack Obama started his political career from his home. Yet you think about it, what does that kind of statement sound like? But the Occupy Wall Street type people that are out there, basically that are supportive of communists. And William Ayers himself admitted in 2002, quote unquote, I am a Marxist, which basically that's Karl Marx, and who's the father of communism.
I also find difficult too, because I'm getting some communications from people that are retired Secret Service and saying even he's not even friendly to his own Secret Service. And as a retired police officer myself, I find that quite abhorrent. I don't know if you were aware that I am retired NYPD, and a lot of this that's going on right now hits pretty close to home.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. I work in the law enforcement field myself, so I know how it feels.
Now, everyone keeps on saying, if you're a Republican, you agree with everything that George Bush did. Do you? Because I don't.
No. I tell people, George Bush did a magnificent job as far as picking judicial nominees. I was very happy with the judicial nominees that he put forth.
No.
The problem I have with George W. Bush was he's a globalist. You have this, the Republican and the Democrat Party have both ignored the borders of America, and I'm not for this NAFTA, CAFTA. I'm not for any of this stuff that globalizes our country. We are a nation of borders. We have to recognize our borders. We have to know who's coming into this country. And I feel like President Bush did a horrible job after 9/11 in securing the borders. He had a perfect opportunity to say, for purposes of national security, we need to go ahead and shut down our borders. Who was going to argue with him at that point? If the Democrats wanted to take that on, let them take it on. But what it is a pandering of votes to the Hispanic vote primarily. And, you know, I mean, I have many friends that are Hispanic that are here legally and they've gone through the legal process. And it's a slap in the face to anybody who's gone through the legal process to be here in America when you have people that are coming here illegally and you have people that are coming here that are terrorists and they're able to sneak across the border. And all we're doing is keeping our own problems and making them worse, you know, in an economy where we're struggling. We need to go ahead and secure our borders and know who's coming here into America. And I think both political parties receive an F in that fashion.
That is absolutely true. And I have to apologize. I had to mute Ron's mic because the background noise was distracting me. I have to apologize for that. So, Ron, I still got you on the line, but unfortunately I had to mute your mic. We're talking with Frank Akila, the author of Sarah Palin Out of Nowhere. And if you look on the episode page and just click on the name of the book, it will take you directly to his website. And if anyone wants to go directly to the website, it is sarahpalinoutofnowhere.com. Now, Mike, I know you've got a ton of questions here.
Okay, question number one. By the way, this is amazing, Frank. This is just listening. I'm just like, wow. Did you have how did the process get started? Was Sarah Palin even a candidate or being in consideration? Did you get the ball rolling with that? Did someone else? Walk us through the process of, okay, John McCain's got the nomination, and then where did you come in and Sarah Palin actually got picked? And when did you learn of Sarah Palin was his choice?
Well, after I sent that first email off to the McCain campaign, I was in contact with the regional chairman. His name is Brian Forrest. And from there, I sent that first email in April 20th, 2004, excuse me, 2008, to the McCain campaign. After I did that, I actually tried to do some work for the McCain campaign. California obviously wasn't a battleground state, so sometimes when I was on the phone with Brian, I was like, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, I was kind of frustrated because it seemed like they didn't really know what they wanted to be done because it wasn't look like California was going to be a state that was actually going to be in the full attention. You know, it's not a battleground state. So I think, you know, they had me go out and they wanted me to find Hispanic businesses that were affected by the high price of gasoline. And I had a friend out here, he had a business, Fernando Agate, and I got some information to the McCain campaign about that. I wrote some letters to the paper regarding, you know, explaining who Barack Obama is, who John McCain is. And then, you know, as summer kind of got, you know, was coming to an end in July, in August, I was like, I really wanted to refocus back on who the Republican Party and Senator McCain needed to choose to be that vice presidential nominee. And I really picked it up in August. On August 2nd, I sent the second email. Between August 2nd and towards the end of the month, there was a total of four more emails, a total of five total going back to the April 20th email, where I was lobbying for Governor Palin to be on that ticket and really doing a strong push for her to be there. Chairman Pacheco had been in touch with me through email as well throughout the summer. And after the fifth email that he ended up emailing me back and stating that the McCain people are well aware of the position on the issue, and they've all been forwarded on to the appropriate people. And so I was like, okay, well, I've done what I could do. You know, that's about all I could do at that point. And unknown to me that the list had come down to about five people, and I'm trying to remember exactly who the five people are. I think it was Lieberman. It was Chuck Hagel was on that list.
You have Condoleezza Rice.
Actually, no, Condoleezza Rice was not on that list, that final list of five. I'm trying to remember. Believe it or not, the mayor, Michael Bloomberg, was on that list as far as the five.
You had Rudy Giuliani and Charlie Crist.
Yes, yes, yes. So anyways, they're looking at, and basically the people that were named off were all moderates. They weren't conservatives. And, John McCain did want a woman to be on that list. I didn't have firsthand knowledge of that, but I found out afterwards. And that Governor Palin was put on that list as kind of a last-minute selection by Senator McCain. And from that point, I could only assume that the information that I put forth about Governor Palin on that final list was then looked at, because prior to her being announced to the world, I got a phone call from Chairman Pacheco, and he calls me up. I got this call coming out of Los Angeles. Never actually spoke to Chairman Pacheco before, just going through email. And when I got the phone call, I answered, and he says, "Can I speak to Frank Aquila, please?" And I said, "Well, this is him." He goes, "Frank, this is Bob Pacheco." And at that point, I knew it was big. And I said, "Yes, Bob." He goes, "Congratulations, you got your girl." And I said, "Governor Palin?" He says, "Absolutely." And I said, You watch what she does. She is going to electrify that ticket. And he goes, "I think you're right." And it was a fabulous moment. I could just basically just cried. You know, I mean, I was so jazzed up, because in my mind, I felt, you know, honestly at the time, that even if that ticket did not win, I felt like Governor Palin was going to be the front runner for the 2012 nomination. And I really feel like she is someone that can put up a firestorm to really fight back against the communist-led movement of the Democrat Party. And so that was a really special moment. And you know what? If it did anything else, the selection of Governor Palin has put her name out there, and she is the lightning rod that's out there to really stir up, especially Tea Party people that love our country, to fight back against the establishment of both the Republican and the Democrat Party.
That is absolutely true, and that's exactly what she's done. And people keep on saying, "Oh, she's going to run again." I said, "She's going to be doing a lot more by not running in any election, just doing what she's doing, going out and doing these speaking engagements, engaging and keeping active with the Tea Party." Now, Frank, I've got my friend Thomas back in on the line. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hey, Annie. How are you?
All right. Now, you originally were going to ask Frank a question, and unfortunately your call had gotten dropped.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to thank Frank for making a comment that he made about Herman Cain and, you know, how Herman Cain terrorizes the Democratic base. Same thing is being done to him that was done to Sarah Palin. And I was behind her 100% when she was on the ticket. To be honest, the only reason why I did vote for McCain was because of Sarah Palin, not because of what John McCain had to offer. So I'll just put that out there. Anyway, let me ask you a question. What is your whole take on the fact that you have not had the establishment GOP that's came to the defense of Herman Cain and these baseless allegations, and that you have all of the other candidates, they just kind of sitting back and not really saying a word. How does that make you feel?
Well, I think that's it's very much a shame. I mean, you okay, put it like this. If Barack Obama was to be attacked, you know, and basically, you know, it, with any type of allegations, could you imagine that what the media would have been doing? They would have been saying, they would have been digging out dirt about the women that were that was being accused. It wouldn't have been
exactly.
about Barack Obama. It would have been about these trashy women and where they came from. That's the exact same thing they did with Paula Jones. So she was trailer trash from Arkansas, you know, and it was the comics that were not talking about Bill Clinton, but they were talking about all these women who, you know, all these sexual allegations and actually, you know, sexual assault allegations, not just sexual
right.
harassment against Bill Clinton. You know, I like to go into even further in depth. You know, I write about this in my book. Do you know that there is sexual allegations that have been brought forth before Barack Obama?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
People don't know about this. They do not know that these sexual allegations are even homosexual allegations by a
yes.
guy named Larry Sinclair. He's a
right.
Democrat from Minnesota. So Larry Sinclair comes out. He has a press conference. He gives specific information about specific dates, specific locations, asked for Barack Obama to release his phone records, which we know that Barack Obama won't release any records of anything at all, and
right.
the media totally ignores it. But it goes beyond further than just the sexual allegations. With that, there were three men that went to Barack Obama's church. One was the choir director. His name is Donald Young. Within 60 days of each other, at the end of 2007, these three men were murdered, okay? Two of them were shot execution style, including Donald Young. Now, Barack Obama's campaign or Barack Obama were never questioned about it, even though Barack Obama was a friend of Donald Young, and these three men were homosexual men, and here Barack Obama had been accused of a homosexual relationship with Larry Sinclair. And I'll put it like this. I work as a peace officer, I know that if there's a motive, number one, he's running for president. Number two, you have been accused of a homosexual relationship. Why didn't
right.
Why didn't the police at least question Barack Obama and his campaign about these murders? Or why didn't the media go out and state anything about Larry Sinclair's allegations? Now, this is why there's the double standard. And I'm not saying that Barack Obama was involved in this, but I'm just saying that there's a double standard here. Imagine if Governor Palin had been accused of a homosexual relationship with another woman, and then three
right.
women were murdered from her church that were all homosexual ladies. If that were to be happening, the media would have been all over it, and they would have been making it look like Governor Palin was involved in this. You don't.
Right.
99% of America does not even know about who Larry Sinclair is or about these murders that took place at the Chicago church.
It is. It's completely a huge double standard. You had my mind just went completely blank. I'm looking at my notes because I got about three or four pages of notes after rereading your book again the other day. Oh, man, there's so many questions here.
Okay. I've got the same thing, Annie. I've got, like, I don't even know where to start. This is, you know, Frank, honestly, we do a lot of interviews, and some are very impressive. Some are middle of the road, and sometimes that's Annie and I's fault. We're just, but I mean, this is amazing. I mean, you know, you're basically us. You are primarily the conservative who stood up to the Republican Party, and you know, I think of all the things you've said, my friend, the one I've liked the most, you have politely basically put it that George Bush was a complete failure as far as a communicator, as far as we the middle class. And keep in mind something you said about he's good at picking judges. He picked Harriet Myers, and he pretty much was forced to pull her name because most of the conservative movement was about to basically tell him, we're going to throw you out there to get shot. And
that is a good point,
but,
man, because Harriet Myers said basically just trust us, you know.
Said, you are one of us who have just wondered, where did our party go? All of a sudden, it's now all about the fat cats of the country club. Where are the middle class like us who've been struggling? And, you know, it is amazing what you have just said. I honestly, I'm like, is this me talking here?
Well, I'm glad we're the same light, you know, especially even here in California. You know, sometimes it's kind of good to get on the radio and talk to other people across the country. So I feel like I am still in a sane country.
Barely.
California is primarily a Democratic state, but let's not keep in mind there are millions of true people like us in California. And
yeah, you know, people ask me about that as well. I said, you know, when you go up and down the coast of California, that's where it's primarily Democrat. San Francisco, down the coast, you know, going into Los Angeles, the Central Valley of California is actually very conservative. We're just outnumbered by the large cities that are right there on that coastline of Berkeley and in Oakland and in San Francisco and, like I said, going down into the Los Angeles area.
Well, Frank, I wanted to get over to one thing. You had some unique ways of doing fundraising that kind of like ruffled a lot of feathers. There was something about a dunk tank. I was hysterical on this one.
That was fun. As a matter of fact, what had happened is we had a registration booth for the Republican Party, and this is another thing that really kind of just irked me about the Republican Party, is they would go get their registration booth last minute. And so all the prime locations were already taken. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, are you guys doing everything backwards? Why are you guys getting your location at the last minute where you get stuck over somewhere near the outhouse? Why don't you guys get yourself a good location that's going to cost the same money and right there in the middle of the street? So they finally listened to me because actually I put my own money up, got that, and told them to pay me back later when we got a new chairman that was finally listening to some of my ideas. And then I thought to myself, what way can we go ahead and draw attention to the Republican booth? So one of the guys that I established as a city captain for my area, he's like, we should do a dunk tank. I was like, you know, that sounds like a great idea. So I went ahead and rented out a dunk tank and put it right next to the Republican booth. And I put a whole big tarp around it so no balls would be flying or anything like that. And I got some high school kids that wanted to be involved in it. And I went out and got some prizes, you know, like a little American flags. And I made sure I went and got, at the time it was a Bill Clinton and a Hillary Clinton mask. And since then, I got Shrek mask for the donkey, and then I got a Barack Obama mask. And I used to say dunk the Democrat. And I'd have people that would sit, these kids would sit in dunk tank with water and everything like that, and they had a great time. It was a hot day, and for $5, people got to dunk the Democrat. And, as they throw the balls, I just tell them, hey, everybody's a winner here at the Republican booth, and they keep getting closer and closer until they actually dunk the Democrat. And the Democrats hated it. They actually went to the people that ran the fair, the street fair, and they stated that they're being harassed. And they're like, "How's that harassment? They're running a dunk tank." And they're like, "No, we're being harassed. We don't want that." And so they try to get it shut down through the street fair. The street fair people said it's freedom of speech. So then they went to the Democrats went to the police department, and they try to file a report that they're being threatened by the dunk tank. And the police chief is like, "Are you serious?" He goes, "That's not a threat. That's freedom of speech. And they're not threatening you. They're just having kids sitting up there in the dunk tank." And so it became a big stink. And it was so funny because the Democrats are just being all hurt about the whole thing. That I just kept the whole thing going, and we would actually make about $500 on a weekend doing the dunk tank, and knowing that we're really affecting the Democrat Party. It was funny because even Democrats would come on by, and they wanted to go ahead and dunk the Democrats as well. Their kid wanted to do it, and it was a good way of drawing a huge crowd right there by the Republican booth.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Thomas had another question.
Actually, just a comment. I want to share this with you. Frank, just listening to you, you are the reason why I really embraced conservatism, because you remind me of what the Republican Party was founded on. I am a black conservative, proud to say I'm a black conservative, but as you know that we're marginalized just like conservative women. And so So as a result, this is what I want to say to you. I thank you for representing the true aspects of what this party was founded on. This party was founded in opposition to slavery. It cared about people. And I thank you that you represent what this party originally was founded on.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas. And you don't realize how much power you have as a black man being able to actually go out and talk to people that are still on that Democrat plantation. Much like kind of like myself, I'm Italian, and a large majority of my family is still Democrat. You know, my dad used to tell me, you know, I said, "Dad, why are you a Democrat?" And he's like, "Well, that's because your grandfather was a Democrat." And I was like, "Well, you don't know why?" And he's like, "Well," he goes, "No." And so I started basically educating my family on why the Democrat Party is not the party of the people. And,
right.
You know, as more and more people get informed about the issues, then more and more people are actually going to go ahead and realize where they stand politically. And if you think about it, the Democrat People Party is trying to brainwash people with a homosexual agenda, equality,
right.
of basically destroying capitalism and keeping people uninformed, because that is their main vein of life. And they don't want people to become informed. They want people to be more dependent on government, and that's why the whole reason of taking out capitalism and making people rely on government is what they're trying to promote.
Right. Frank, you had I call your book the conservative guidebook. I think it should be the blueprint for the Republican Party to come back to where it deserves to be, because in the last half of the book, you start outlining conservative values, such as pro-life and civil rights. Mm-hmm. And give me some of your intake on, say, for example, Obama's oil buddy, Ken Salazar.
Well, you know what's funny is here. Well, just talk about oil in general. Okay, he has his. Stephen Chu is the guy that's the energy secretary, and I think Ken Salazar is the interior secretary. But here you got these guys that basically they believe in government, they believe in destroying capitalism again. So Stephen Chu is out there, and he's actually stating that he would like to see gasoline prices jump to a range of $7 to $9 a gallon. Now, why isn't people being aware that that's the agenda of the energy secretary? That, you know, they asked Barack Obama about that, you know, about do you want to see gasoline at $7 to $9 a gallon? And Barack Obama's answer is, well, I want to see it go up gradually. Well, you know what? We don't need to have it go up gradually. Right now, here in America, we have a ton of oil here in America. If you take just the Colorado Rocky Mountains, for example, there's more oil just in the Colorado Rocky Mountains. I think it's called the Green River Formation. That there is eight times the amount of oil there than the whole country of Saudi Arabia. We have more oil just in that area of Colorado, Rocky Mountains, the Utah, and Wyoming. That doesn't count what oil we have up in Alaska. Doesn't count what oil is up in the Dakotas, off the coast of California. Basically, off the coast of California, there's so much oil that when the ground is actually cracked, there's cracks in the ocean floor of oil seeping up. And the ocean's basically kind of cleaning itself out, but yet you have oil just seeping out. We have a ton of oil. You could literally drop the price of oil. If we were to tap into our own oil, it's been estimated that the price of gasoline could drop anywhere from 60 cents to $1.20 a gallon. Now, I'll tell you what. If a conservative was in the White House and we were able to start tapping our own oil, where we didn't have to rely on domestic oil, for example, foreign oil, for example, you're talking about creating a large number of jobs. And then what would the price of commodities go if all of a sudden oil prices dropped by two-thirds? by 70% at the gas pump right now. If you dropped it down to a buck a gallon, could you imagine the profits for businesses that they would be able to make? And then also the fact that at that point you can actually start hiring more workers. So if you put that in context of what Stephen Chu wants to do and what the Democrat Party wants to do, they don't want us relying on our own domestic oil. They want to go ahead and raise the price of oil. What's that going to do to business? It's going to kill business. And if you think about what the whole plan of the communist movement is, it's to destroy business and that and build government. And that is what precisely what they want to do, and that's the problem here in America. Another solution that I put in America is keep America first. And I have never heard any politician talk about this, but I put this as my idea. I put this out, and some politicians have heard it, and they liked it. My idea about keep America first is right now businesses are taxed worldwide. In America, we pay the second highest tax rate in the world for businesses. And my idea is if you are an American-only business, you have not expanded, you have not gone out of this country, which basically is going to be 99% of your smaller businesses, your business tax rate should be immediately cut in half. And if that means if you are a company that has gone global, well, you could pay the higher tax rate because you're a global company. But if you're a company that has gone ahead and decided to go to India or going to Mexico for cheaper labor, well, you know what? If your business tax rate's been cut in half, how about sending those jobs instead to Alabama or to Kentucky and then keep your company here in America because you're going to get the lower tax rate and you're going to benefit it and you're going to basically start hiring more workers and you're going to get a business tax rate that's going to help all small businesses. That's not only going to help American only. I tell you, when I talk to people that are even involved in unions, that is the process of even getting the union vote because they want union people want American jobs to stay here in America, and they're tired of being outsourced. And I think that goes across the board for all American workers.
Why don't the Republicans, the fat cats, see that? Why don't the Mitch McConnells and the George W., the morons and idiots of this party, what? It's almost as like somebody is hitting them in the face with a bat, and they stop every time and say, what happened?
Well, they haven't read my book yet. That's the problem.
Hey, Annie, can I get in a minute?
Yeah, sure, Ron.
Hey, I got to leave, but I just wanted to make a couple quick comments, and I'm going to get out of here. First of all, you know, Frank's book, I think probably I was one of the first, and you've covered it well, but just to Frank's compliment, if you take this book in the evening and you sit down, and you know, you listen to Hannity and these people talk about some of the things that he says about Obama, but if you sit down and you actually read them with some of the facts attached to them, and you know, and you start to think and you wonder, and you know, does Obama have any legal relatives in this country? And I just read somewhere that kind of relates that his dad, you know, he doesn't have two American citizen parents, so he's technically not American citizen. And then, you know, in the last couple of nights, you watch what they've been doing to Herman Cain, and I agree with him, and what you've been seeing, you know, Fox and them trying to clear the air for Newt and them. And, you know, if you sit down and took Frank's book and you read it at night, all of a sudden this stuff, it's not like listening to Hank. All of a sudden this stuff comes real, and you say, what if we were to take this information and pound the heck out of Obama for answers like they are Newt and Cain and some of and it would have to tear, it'd have to say, hey, this guy is not capable of even being where he's at. And I think, you know, this is one great book. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I appreciated Thomas being in there, because that's being here in Middle Georgia is one of the things I've been trying to do, is find the conservative black base. And it is hard. You know, we have the friend in South Carolina that and I can't remember his name right now, but he wrote the other book that you know who I'm talking to about.
Are you thinking of North Carolina with Lenny McAllister?
Lenny McAllister.
Yeah, Lenny's up in Chicago now.
Is he in Chicago?
Yeah, he's up in Chicago now.
Yeah, he's another good one. But, you know, Frank, this book of Frank, people need to read it and start asking those questions, because there's stuff in there that really opens your eyes. So I'm going to back out of here, but it was a pleasure talking to you, Frank. I like your comments. And
God bless you,
maybe
Ron.
We'll get back together again, but you did a great job, and you got my support, and
hey,
people need to read that
support.
Book.
Tell everybody in your tea party, you know, tell them to talk to their friends and family, you know, especially if they got high school or college family, to have them get this book. It's a good resource book for them as they basically attack back. I had a lot of people that stated that they read the book and basically been able to fight back with the liberal ideology with all the information in this book, because everything is referenced in this book, and it is a very powerful tool. It's been fact-checked by an attorney. There's a lot there. I mean, as you stated, Ann, one guy, he wrote a review, said this is a political Bible for all conservatives. So, I mean, that's been very powerful that the information has been able to get out there. Unfortunately, I don't have the name ID nationally to you know, it's not available in any bookstore. It's only available online, so you know, people go that way, and you know, go to sarahpalinoutofnowhere.com, and there's actually a video clip of me and Governor Palin meeting right there that people could check out as well.
Oh yeah, and ladies, you'll love the picture of Frank. I mean, like my grandmother Della Vecchia used to say, he's a nice Italian boy.
And I'm single still, Ann.
There you go.
Oh, she would have loved you.
Yeah. I'm going back out of here, Annie. I got to take my wife somewhere. But I've enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed getting to hear your voice, Frank, and feel like
we've been friends
a long time, man.
Yeah.
So you
take
care.
And you take care, Ron.
You do the same. You keep fighting. We'll catch you all later. Bye.
Fantastic. Fantastic. As a matter of fact, Thomas just sent me a message saying he'd love to interview you also, Frank. So I will shoot over to you Thomas's information so the two of you can hook up.
Absolutely. Would love to do that.
Okay.
Frank, I have a question, two follow-ups. Number one is when the guy from the GOP called you, I forgot his name, but he said to you, congratulations, we got your girl. How long after that was the announcement made Sarah Palin has been selected by McCain nationally?
It was probably within about 20 minutes.
Okay, so was
you know,
that quick?
I'll tell you that morning that actually happened. I remember riding home in my car, and all the speculation was on Romney and Palente, and there was no word of Sarah Palin at all. And I was actually just so frustrated. I mean, it's like I just got home, and I didn't want to even look to see who McCain had picked. And I got the next morning. And the first thing I saw on television, I turned on the TV, is this airplane over at Hooks Field in Iowa, Ohio. And so I'm watching that, and all the speculation, and there's a picture of Governor Palin came up on TV, and I literally fell out of bed trying to go ahead and turn the TV up. And I went downstairs, and there was no confirmation. They just had this plane out of Alaska, and there was stated that Romney was still in Massachusetts. Then it came across stating that that Palente was still over there in Minnesota. And the speculation had been churned that there's still other people possible. And Carly Ferrellarina's picture, she's the lady that was McCain's economic advisor. Her picture came up on television. So I'm watching all this speculation. And then the phone rang. And when the phone rang, I didn't even want to answer it. And it's like, I don't know anybody from Los Angeles. So I got the call coming up out of Los Angeles coming up, you know, because my phone has an automated where it tells where the call is originating from. And so, I went to answer it. And it was the first time that me and Chairman Pacheco ever spoke. And he knew that I had been really lobbying for her, and that's when he said, congratulations, you got your girl. And you know, we end up talking a little bit, and I said, well, I don't know how much influence I had on that selection. And he's like, no, Frank, he goes, his exact words, you had great influence on that selection. And I said, well, really? And he's like, yeah. He goes, your emails went directly to the people that made that final decision with Senator McCain.
Obviously, if he's calling you an hour or so before they're making an announcement, you had something to do with it. They wouldn't even bother to call you. That is amazing.
Well, yes, it was. And I'll tell you what, it was the most exciting phone call I received, you know, because, you know, to receive that call after you've spent all that time lobbying for Governor Palin, and then feeling like the night before that she was even in the picture. I think it was a well-kept secret, and I'll tell you what, I was ecstatic, you know. And then, you know, being able to go up and see Governor Palin, I saw her 2 months ago, and she was excited. She goes, "Oh, you got the book," and you can see that in the video. And when I seen her, and I'll tell you what a very personal lady. I got a chance to meet with her when I was in Iowa 4 different times. When she came off stage after speaking, she saw me, and she's, you know, shaking hands. She's like, "Oh, hi, Frank," like that. And I was like, "Hi," you know, and I said, "Hey, I'll be backstage." And I went back there and I actually talked to Todd for about 10 minutes. And, you know, I'll tell you what, just really normal people. Governor Palin never got into politics for her own political ego. She got into politics, you know, starting with the PTA to city council out of concern for her children, for concern for her family. Mayor, for concern of people of the city, got on the Gas and Oil Conservation Commission. You know, fought against the corruption up there in Alaska and the Republican Party. She bucked the trend of the Republican Party, exposed the corruption that they were involved in, and also Murkowski took him on, defeated him. She was a very popular governor. She was somebody that had at one point a 90% approval rating. She can't even get a 90% approval rating amongst your own family members. So that's something very well accomplished. And so, you know, right now in America, we're really stuck up against a rock and a hard place. Our national debt right now is approaching $15 trillion. And, you know, people have no idea. What is $15 trillion? You know, how much money is that? You know, and, you know, I'll give you an example of $1 trillion. If our Congress today says, you know, we're going to cap the $15 trillion, we're not going to spend one more penny over that $15 trillion, and we're going to pay down that national debt, we're not going to have any more interest added on, and Congress says, let's set aside $1 million a day. Let's put this $1 million into the bank. Each day, we're going to put $1 million into the bank. If Congress did that, to save up for $1 million, it would take us 2,740 years. Again, 2,740 years to save up $1 trillion. To save up for $15 trillion of our national debt right now, you're talking about 41,100 years, and we got to $15 trillion in debt in less than 100 years today. That's how much money our government is spending, and people have no idea how much we're in debt we are as a nation, and yet we're continually spending and spending and spending, and that doesn't even go into the debt that we're going to be owing for people that are going to be on Social Security, Medicare. Our government's getting too big, it's getting too powerful, and it's sucking up and destroying the nation, and it's done on purpose. The Obama administration is doing it on purpose because, as in the words of Saul Alinsky, the whole idea is to quote, this is from his book, burn the system down and then replace it with a new one. And I think another thing your listeners need to understand as well is the Communist Party USA has already endorsed Barack Obama for president. I have no problem calling Barack Obama a communist. That's what he is. When the Communist Party USA has already stated that the agenda, matter of fact, this is a quote, Obama's agenda is the agenda of the Communist Party USA, how nice, and, quote, is a necessary step towards a new society. We in the Republican Party or conservatives need to go ahead and expose all this information and let people know that Obama's agenda is the agenda of the Communist Party USA, that the Communist Party USA has already stated it's the same agenda. And Barack Obama would come out and say, "Oh, I'm running for president and I'm a communist." We need to go ahead and expose how much we're in debt and how much we're destroying our own country and how they're trying to burn the system down and recreate their own one with a whole brand new constitution and with government powers.
And that is so very, very true, Frank. You're listening to Sudden Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest is Frank Akila, author of the book Sarah Palin Out of Nowhere. And I call it the blueprint to return Republicans back to conservatism. Every single Republicans should have this mailed to them and told to sit down and read this, and this is what it is to be. not the crap you're pulling out there now. Now, we have Thomas who wants to ask, who are you going to endorse in the GOP for the president?
I'm going for Herman Cain. Herman Cain is the man that the Democrats fear the most, and I'll tell you why. First off, again, Herman Cain has come out. He is a straight-talk black conservative that the Democrats are going to have huge problems with. First off, anybody that goes against Barack Obama, the first thing they're going to try to do is what they did before. Oh, you must be a racist. You're not going to vote for the black guy. Okay? You take out that's one issue. Okay? They have to go ahead. Matter of fact, Herman Cain is more of a black man than Barack Obama is. Okay? To me, that's just one issue to kind of just throw it out there. But another issue is Herman Cain is the only person that's running for office right now has no ties to Washington. He has never held an elected position in Washington. He could go in there as an outsider to Washington and state to do what is right for America. He's come up with this 999 plan. You know what? Whether you agree or disagree with it, it has to be implemented. But the whole thing is, he's at least trying to make solutions for America. Herman Cain is much like Governor Palin, where he is an outsider, and you know doesn't owe anybody anything, and that's where he could go in there and state that we need to start doing what's right instead of going ahead and being tied down by some political lobbyist and somebody that's trying to go ahead and just make changes for their own benefit, and let's start doing what's right. I just heard the other day how people in Congress, they don't ever get investigated for insider trading, because insider trading amongst congressmen and senators is legal. So basically, they can go ahead and be on a committee that's going to benefit some company, and then go buy money and purchase stock in that company, and that company just goes up, skyrocket. They could be on the banking financing committee, and they could buy bank stocks. They could be on the healthcare committee and buy healthcare stocks. This stuff, if it was in the private sector, you'd be going to jail on. But you got people like Barney Frank and Christopher Dodd who basically are making insider deals even for their own personal finances and with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then the Community Reinvestment Act that took place where all these banks were forced to give these extra loans to people that didn't even qualify for loans. People got to understand where all this came from. And so there's so much corruption in Washington. I really want Washington outsider to become our next president.
Now, that is something I think everyone is looking at. Now, Herman Cain still has to get past these sexual harassment allegations. And I think that's what's throwing him down in the polls. He's got to be able to turn around and fight back. I don't see him really swinging hard enough on that. That's the only thing that's really distracting us.
Yeah, I think Herman Cain, he needs to do – I'm proud of the fact that he said, I'm not going to get out of the race. I'm going to stay in there. You know, I mean, basically he has come out and stated that these allegations are untrue. And I would like to see him fight back. It's same sense that where Governor Palin, you know, where they had these allegations brought up against her and everything like that. They need to go ahead and continue to fight. Herman Cain needs to expose, in the same sense, take the Democrat tactics right back to them. You know, who are these people? You know, and explain to the American people how there's a Chicago connection to some of these ladies that all of a sudden are supposedly coming out of the woodwork, you know, to say, oh, there was sexual harassment. Remember, it's allegation of sexual harassment. There is no touching. That one woman that tried to state that he tried to put his hand up her skirt and then tried to grab her head. She's so full of crap. There's nothing there. I could read as a peace officer. I could read right through it that woman. She's coming. She's flat out lying. And the whole thing was a setup. First off, if you were a lady, something like that happened where a guy just put his hand up your skirt and he grabbed her head and tried to shove it down towards his crotch, the first thing you're going to do is slap that guy, get out of the car, and call a policeman. Or if she did, as she stated, told her boyfriend, but don't told the boyfriend not to do anything, he'd be like, what? you know, hey, we're filing charges. We're filing a complaint against the company right now. We're filing charges against to the police department right now. And as they found out she's such a gold digger in her own past, that's the type of lady that she is. And she's using this as an opportune moment. And from what my understanding is, she has ties right there into Chicago with David Axelrod, who is on Obama's chief of staff. The Republican Party and Herman Cain need to expose the corruption and the tactics of Saul Alinsky that's being used out there and go right back at them and expose their tactics in the same right.
That's true. And what people don't realize, David Plouffe, I forget what his position is. He now chief of staff?
I think it was David Axelrod.
He replaced David Axelrod. But David Axelrod and David Plouffe are partners in a Democratic think tank that does all the campaigns for the Democratic officials. And then Daley is tied in that, you know, former Chicago mayor. Then you throw in Rahm Emanuel Kern. It's a whole big incestuous relationship between Chicago and Obama. And
exactly.
What does he do? He sets up his campaign headquarters in Chicago, of all places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that surprise anybody? Hello?
No, that shouldn't surprise anyone. But Thomas said he wanted to ask one more question. Thomas, you have another question?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, a comment in the question. Frank, did you hear speculation about the fact that Sharon Bialik actually is not the fourth accuser, but she was the third anonymous donor?
No, I'm not really familiar with all that.
I haven't heard that.
The thing of it is, with that, and I have it from actually a very good source, and I don't want to name them. It was someone I interviewed on my show who's pretty well connected around the country and media and stuff like that. So he had pointed out to me, because he had actually got a phone call while he was interviewing, and it was one of his sources in CNN. And had shared that with them. But you don't hear that angle from the mainstream media. So having said all that, you said you're a police officer. Didn't you find it kind of strange that what she was describing, she kept referring to as sexually inappropriate, but yet she described what by law, legally, is a sexual assault.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's totally criminal. And like I said, there's a number of things that she could complain about. If she was unemployed and she was looking for a job at that moment, she would have been seeking compensation just for the fact of what she accused Herman Cain of doing. Not only that,
right.
Going back to telling the boyfriend and then there was no follow up with that. And there's so many holes and stinks. And you know what? It was an opportune moment to go ahead and just keep the fire burning for to attack this guy, because he is such a threat to Barack Obama.
And fellow Republicans, too. Many Republicans
yes.
don't like
yes,
Herm
absolutely.
Cain because he's not tied in. I for me, the red flag, how often does a person of an accuser just walk in with an attorney, Gloria Allred? How the hell does that happen? I get an attorney,
exactly.
I see, look it up in my local town. She walks on stage filled full of cameras, and there's Gloria Allred. That has lies, bullshit written all over it right there. Not to mention, why didn't you file a complaint like a couple hours after it happened? Most companies, which the restaurant industry is huge, they have a human resources. Where's her email? If this happened at noon, where's her email at 2:30 or at 6 o'clock that evening? Or maybe going to Herm Cain's supervisor?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Again, there's just so much there. So many lies that are there, and, you know, I like this lady that came up, with Gloria Allwright, you know, it does stink. It does stink. And you know, all it has come down to is public perception. You know, I mean, going back to Sarah Palin, for example, you know, I point out, you know, if you go and you ask, 90% of Americans, and you say, who said that you could see Russia from my backyard in Alaska? And they're going to say, oh, Governor Palin said that. Well, it wasn't. You know, it was that one gal on Saturday Night Live. I can't draw a blank of her name right now. I forget her name. But anyways, Governor Palin, what she did say is you can actually see Russia from Alaska, which is true. And she was saying it into a general comment, and they totally took the whole thing out of context and made a big Saturday Night Live joke out of the whole thing. And Tina Fey. And so they take these comments that Tina Fey states, and you got the jokes going out there, and 90% of America believe it. But yet, you know, and they try to make Governor Palin seem like she's this dimwit from up there in Alaska, and when she would debate Barack Obama into a hole. Yet at Barack Obama at the same time, he's stating now, he goes, oh, well, I've traveled to, 57 states. I have one more to go. I'm like, wait a minute. You're running for president of the United States. You do not know how many states are in the United States of America? Imagine if Governor Palin had said, I've been to 57 states, I got one more to go. Imagine what the media would have been playing that up, but they played it down for Barack Obama.
Very true. You know, I think one of the not only is that very true, but a key point to that is Barack Obama could have been a goat. He could have been anybody for the Democratic Party. The problem there was as conservatives and primarily Republicans, they had turned their back so bad on America, people hated Republicans. And no matter who we elected, we were going to pay the price for. And sadly, we got a person who not only dislikes America, and I don't say that by his words, I say by his the laws that he passes, the actions that he takes.
Amen.
We can say anything we want. I can convince every one of you guys that I'm a millionaire with my words. But when you see I'm driving a car with three different colored doors and only three tires on it, obviously I'm not. But the bottom line is I think the Republicans, basically the Democrats didn't win anything. The Republicans lost it. It's with them turning their backs on we the people. And that's a sad state of affairs, and I think from basically looking over your book and what you're saying, we need to get back. You know, the Republicans joined the conservative movement. The conservatives never went to the Republicans. And the conservative movement, now moving to the Tea Party, needs to hold its ground and basically say, look, you're either coming this way because we're not moving.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I kind of put a blame going back on Senator McCain. You know, when basically he's like, don't call him Barack Hussein Obama. Wait a minute, you called the guy who he is. And you know what? If we're going to win a presidency, or if we're going to go ahead, you got to have somebody that's going to take that position in leadership and state, you know what? Oh, you can't be saying, oh, the guy's a statesman. No, you got to say, call him a Marxist. We are dealing with straight Marxists that are trying to destroy this country. You've got to lay out to the people what communism is, what socialism is, and how there's a threat of America right now. And basically, you can go to – I'll give you a website, www.usdebtclock.org, and see where our national debt is and let people see how much we are in debt as a nation and how much of a problem we're going to be having into our future and how we're getting that way. And, you know, for people to say, well, George Bush, you know, he led us into a huge debt. Yes, he did. And Barack Obama took upon the debt that George Bush did in a year and a half and in the same amount of time that George Bush did in 8 years. And unless we go ahead and state that we're going to cut back government and promote American businesses, we're going to continue to have more and more problems. And we got to expose what communism is, because communism is the power and the growth of government. And once, like I said, going back to what I stated right in the beginning of the show, as Thomas Jefferson stated, a government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have.
That is absolutely true. Thomas, I'm going to let you go because we got just 5 minutes left, and I want to finish up with Frank. I want to thank you for your call here. You can find Frank Aquila, and you can find his book. It's at sarahpalinoutofnowhere.com. The link is up on the episode info page as well as up in the chat room. And I want to thank everyone for joining us in the chat room. Frank, are you going to have a follow-up book on this, or are you going to start writing on another subject? Because I absolutely enjoyed your book. And the PDF copy you gave me, I've got markings all over it, and your autographed copy is up on the shelf. As a matter of fact, my husband's reading that one right now.
Oh, that's wonderful, Anne. You know what? I never expected to write a book ever. If you actually read into my book in Chapter 2, people will be surprised to realize I was in special education back when I was even in high school. My father could not read and write, and it was a struggle. To come to a point where I actually started writing a book, it's only by God that I wrote this book. And I felt like I had to put the information out there. Some friends told me that, Frank, you have a story to tell, and I sat down and wrote it. I think as right now, it was a big sacrifice. I actually wrote the book while I was working full-time, coaching both my boys in baseball, and being a single father, you know, to them. It was pretty much of a struggle. And, I don't plan on writing another book, but I still plan on, continuing my own political organization and promoting the information I actually have in this book.
Okay. My autographed copy book seems to be missing. I know I'm not one of you elite police, as they call it, the popos, but it must have gotten lost in the mail. Frank, a couple quick questions, just simple middle-class type questions.
Sure.
What's your favorite professional baseball team? What's your favorite college team you like to cheer for? You know, hockey team, just the football teams, et cetera.
Well, you know, it's funny. Because I grew up in the Bay Area. I'm an A's fan. But there's a rivalry between the Oakland Raiders and the San Francisco 49ers. And my dad, my grandfather grew up 49er fan. Matter of fact, I got to tell you the story. My dad grew up in Richmond, California, which is right in the Bay Area. My mom actually grew up in Berkeley. So I want to tell people that as soon as the liberals find out there's a Berkeley connection to this book, they're going to have to go get their medical marijuana. But my parents, when I was younger, they stated to me, they say, hey, we want to get you a sports jacket. Which one would you want? And I kind of went back and forth between the Raiders and the 49ers. And at the time, I was still a little kid, and I went ahead and got a Raider jacket, and I went to school, and I was wearing my Raider jacket, and I liked both teams. I liked the 49ers, too. And I went to school, and all the kids that were 49ers fans started picking on me and saying, oh, the Raiders stink. So I started telling them their team stink, and so basically, by default, I kind of became a Raider fan in that whole aspect because everybody tried to make fun of my jacket. So that's, I've kind of been growing up a Raiders and A's fan, but I told my son I'm going to coach his baseball team this year. And we're actually going to be called the Rockies. So I kind of like the Colorado Rockies too. And I don't really follow too much hockey or college sports, but I've basically kind of been I'm also a Green Bay Packer fan. I like.
Ah, there's something that I like about you.
Yeah. I knew when I started talking about the Raiders, you guys were going to start hating me then. At that point, but no, I've always been like a small market team. I kind of root for the underdogs in a lot of ways. You know, when I watch teams play, you know, the team that's kind of underrated. So that's kind of how I've been with sports.
What about NASCAR?
NASCAR, you know, my kids have always been like they actually follow Tony Stewart and Dale Earnhardt, you know, Junior, you know. So I've never really sat back and watched any NASCAR races though.
Well, Sunday is the final race at Homestead, and right now it's 4 points between Carl Edwards and Tony Stewart. And yesterday I was wearing my Tony Stewart T-shirt, but the old one.
Well, my youngest son has a Tony Stewart hat, so he likes to wear that Tony Stewart hat around. So I'll have to let him know about the race.
Ah, all right. Because my cousin still races in the NASCAR division. He's in the Whelen Modified division. So if anyone follows Whelen Modified, the number 99, Jamie Tomeno, is my cousin.
Wow, Andy, you're in the big time. Frank, do me a favor. Next time you pull someone over who maybe happens to have an expired license and no insurance, give the guy a break and let him slide, unlike what happened to me about 2 hours ago.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, here in California, even if they're illegal, you got to let them go, right?
Well, Frank, this has been a blast, and I do welcome you to come back anytime, and I hope we sold you a couple books today.
Well, I appreciate it, Ann, and please stay in touch with me. Mike, please stay in touch, and if you want to get an autographed copy, get my email from Ann, and I'll be more than glad to autograph one for you.
Are you on Facebook?
I am on Facebook. Yes, I am.
I'll just look you up on Facebook. You're a single guy. I'm a single guy. Annie don't need to know our business.
Okay, that sounds good.
Well, thank you. You have been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, and for those that are listening online, you probably lost the connection because now we're going a few minutes over. We've had a fantastic time here, Mike, but you know what's going to happen? Tuesday, we got a follow-up with Mundo Fraser on his book, The Secret Life of Barack Hussein Obama. How good is that?
Wow.
I can't wait. I'll be joining you about shortly, just after 2:30.
That'll be fantastic. Mundo Fraser is an excellent book. Following up right behind Frank is the two of them reading one back to back. Oh, man, you got to have both these books on your bookcase. It is a must. So I want to thank everyone for listening in to Southern Sense, and I hope you have a safe and happy, healthy weekend. We will be back 22nd Tuesday with Mondo Fraser at 2 o'clock, same bat station, same bat channel. So until then, we say good night.
Turn out the light.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.